Hi, I'm Katya.
And I'm Rin.
And we're here at the Commonwealth Center for Holistic Herbalism in Boston, Massachusetts.
And on the internet everywhere, thanks to the power of the podcast.
Woo! We have some pretty exciting stuff to talk about today, like Tulsi, which is Herbstock's 2018 Herb of the Year.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to talk about some formulation stuff?
Yeah, as promised last time.
Awesome. But before we do that, we just want to let you know that we're not doctors. We are herbalists and holistic health educators.
Ideas discussed in this podcast do not constitute medical advice. No state or federal authority licenses herbalists in the U.S. These discussions are for educational purposes only. Everyone's body is different, so the things we're talking about may or may not apply directly to you, but they will give you some information to think about and research more.
And we want to remind you that your good health is your own personal right and responsibility. The final decision in considering any course of therapy, whether it's discussed on the internet or prescribed by your physician, is always yours.
Yep.
Yay.
There it is.
Well, I have some fun things to share. First is that tomorrow, Saturday, June 2nd, and Sunday is Herbstock, and that is our local herb conference and festival here in Boston. Actually, it's in Somerville, and we're super, super excited. Every year, there's several thousand people who come out and just look at all the beautiful herby things that are available, and that is so exciting. So we're really excited to be there. We're going to have our books there, and if you want to pick one up, then you can do that, and we will sign it for you right away. But if you're not local and you have a copy of our book, just send us an email at info@commonwealthherbs.com, and we will send you a fancy book plate inscribed with a nice message, and we'll send it right to you. So even if you're not here local, we can still sign your book for you. Yay!
Yeah.
We'll also have the herb cards there, and this is an oracle and study deck that I made, and it's really cool. You can use it like flashcards just to study your herbs, or you can use it as like a tarot deck, and that's how I use it every day, actually, and a lot of times in the evening, too. I like to just pick a card and kind of meditate on it as I go to bed. And this is the second printing of those cards, which is really exciting. And so we have a big basket full of 100 fresh new decks ready to go. And so if you want one, come to Herbstock. And if you're not local, hopefully we won't sell out of them at Herbstock, and I can send one to you. But if we do, don't worry, I'll print more. And let's see. Oh, the other thing I wanted to say in the beginning today was I wanted to give a special shout out to a handful of people. One is to Rachel Hull in Australia, who mentioned us on Instagram and said that she loves our podcast all the way in Australia. And I think that Rachel wins the award for listens to our podcast from the furthest point away from Boston. So hi, Rachel, thank you for listening. And I also wanted to give a shout out to a lovely person who is on Instagram as Highland Birth. And this person is a doula and an herbalist in West Virginia, and also likes our podcast and mentioned us on Instagram. And I wanted to say hi to you. And I'm so glad that you like our podcast. Yay.
Thank you for listening.
And then a person, N. Paxton, and another person or people, Carrie and Dan, reviewed us on iTunes and said that they're really enjoying the podcast. And I'm so excited, you guys. I'm glad that you are. It's really hard to know if people are listening. Like, we, you know, we record this and we have a lot of fun with it, but there's no like great analytics about it, and it's weird because it's very asynchronous. So it's super fun when people post about it or write reviews, because then we're like, wow, there's a person who's listening to it, and we feel very excited about you. So if you want a shout out, then let us know that you like the podcast, and we will feel very excited about you too.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
All right. I think that's all the beginning stuff.
I think so.
Let's talk about Tulsi. So I really wanted to talk about Tulsi this week because tomorrow is Herbstock and Tulsi is the herb of the year for Herbstock. And also because it seems like we mention Tulsi every week. It's like everything that we're ever talking about, it feels like Tulsi comes up for it. And so I'm always talking about Tulsi, but I'm never talking about Tulsi. You know what I mean? Like I'm always talking about something and Tulsi is included, and I don't think that I've ever just sat and talked about Tulsi itself and just given it its own time in the sun. So I'm excited to do that. You know, one of my favorite stories about Tulsi is actually that I was in the bus one day and I was carrying a big wooden sign with our logo printed on it, or painted on it, actually. And our logo is a sage and a lavender, and the two flowers kind of overlap, or the two plants kind of overlap somewhat. And from across the bus, a woman saw it, and like my arm was kind of across it. And you know, the flowers on lavender are very similar to Tulsi flowers, and they're in the same family. They're both in the mint family, so that makes sense. Mm. And kind of like sideways with my arm across it and from, you know, a little way away, you can look at a sage and lavender drawing and be like, oh, that kind of looks like Tulsi. And this woman was excited, and she said, hey, that kind of looks like Tulsi. And I said, oh, yes, it does. It's sage and lavender put together, actually, but it kind of looks like Tulsi. And she was sharing that she had immigrated here from India when she was very, very young with her parents, and that her mother would tell her about how every morning you would go out into the garden and walk around the Tulsi plant and that you would stay healthy. And she was telling the story and she kind of laughed. And she was like, well, it's, of course, it's just an old wives' tale. And at this point, I should maybe note that she was wearing medical scrubs. So she, you know, maybe she was a nurse or a tech or something in the medical industry. And I said, actually, you know, it's not an old wives' tale. You know, like, actually, we can use science to help explain this old traditional tradition. I think you could say a traditional tradition. Yes, this old traditional practice. And so one of the things that she was saying was that if you did this, you would never get sick. And the interesting thing there is that, of course, Tulsi is very high in all kinds of volatile oils. Volatile oils, that's the same as saying essential oils. It's just that they're still in the plant at this point. And it also is the same as saying the smelly stuff. So if you're not a huge fan of chemistry, it is the stuff that is smelly. And the volatile oil content in any plant, really, is highly antimicrobial. And that accounts in many cases for a plant's ability to counteract illness, especially when we're talking about respiratory illness, because those volatile oils are kind of like an organic form of Lysol. You know, it sort of, you know, kills germs on contact. And the on contact part there is very important because they don't necessarily work through the bloodstream in the kind of way that an antibiotic or a pharmaceutical would. They really work much more like Lysol. You know, there's not exactly accurate to say it's the herbal Lysol, but like sort of conceptually, it's very much more like that kind of a function. And so when you're breathing in those volatile oils, what you're really doing is disinfecting your lungs and making it really hard for any pathogens who have gotten themselves in there to make a home for themselves and make you sick. So I think that's actually really cool, and it's something that we rarely talk about when we're talking about Tulsi. When I talk about Tulsi, I'm almost always talking about stress or the hippocampus, because that's my favorite thing to say, or, you know, different adaptogenic aspects of Tulsi. And I rarely talk about its ability just to help you stay healthy every day in a respiratory aspect, like just to help you not get sick. But fundamentally, right down at its core, Tulsi is a mint family plant. It's got a ton of volatile oils. And if you breathe some of those in every day, a few times a day, then you're keeping your lung space really clean and tidy and pathogen free. So it was super fun to talk to that woman on the bus about that and to be like, you know what? It might be an old wives' tale, but those were some pretty wise old wives because there's actual, you know, like there's a lot behind that. And I love it when we can explain old traditions with science and we can look back and say, wow, well, I never really understood why my grandmother did that. And now I do. And especially because I think in our culture, it's so frequently the sort of inclination to trust science over tradition and to trust newness over tradition, or like to inherently value things that are new more than we value things that are old practices. I'm generalizing there, but I think that in our culture that's fairly pervasive.
Sure.
It's really fun when we can see these new technologies and new ways of thinking actually validating our old traditions and old ways of thinking. And I think that we could stand to do that a little bit more, even just as people across generations, to sort of think about, well, how could I look at older generations and how they've done things and see if actually it might not be so far away from how I've done things.
Yeah. And sometimes there's something that you might discover in a historical context that makes something make a lot more sense all of a sudden. For instance, recently, one of our students wrote a monograph about calendula, and they noted that sometimes in the past, folks would infuse the butter that they made with calendula flowers in order to give it a darker yellow or like an orange color, which your butter should have if your cows were feeding on like fresh grass and making lots of vitamin K2 and all kinds of other good stuff for you. But you know, when it's like the winter time or whatever else, the cows don't have a lot of that to eat, and they can't make the vitamins, and then the butter gets a little pale, and then people would color it with the calendula. And I was like, oh, that must be why you hear occasionally people saying you could put some butter onto a burn. Because if calendula had been infused into there,
that makes so much sense.
Then that would actually be pretty effective and a fine idea if it was like a first degree burn and it wasn't all like blistery and wet or whatever.
And but once the heat has dissipated.
Yeah, after the heat died off and it was just a dry red burn, go ahead and, you know, like the same way we would use a calendula infused salve or something today. But it doesn't make any sense to take like modern butter or whatever and just put it on a burn. It's not gonna help the healing. It's just gonna be an oil layer, and you know, so that's not a good plan. But you know, if you actually had those flowers going on, okay, suddenly
that's
it makes sense
so
again.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, yeah, we need to, like, not be too quick to write these things off, because even if it doesn't make sense from our current understanding, there could be, like, a piece of the story we didn't have that would suddenly make it clear. So, yeah. Let's do that.
Yeah. Of course, I also do love looking at plants in the modern way, and as I have said before, one of my favorite aspects of Tulsi is that it stimulates regrowth in the hippocampus, and that is information that we could not have had until we had things like MRIs and other types of equipment that would allow us to see that. And The hippocampus is the part of the brain where we process our experiences into memories, or like our short-term memory into long-term memory. And it's funny, like if you are of a certain age and remember computers when they were first becoming a thing that you could have in one room instead of a thing that used up an entire room, then the idea of like short-term memory versus long-term memory, you know, is like, you know, the long-term memory is like that floppy disk that was actually floppy. And
RAM versus ROM.
Yeah, exactly. And like the short-term memory was if you turn off the computer, then you lost it all. And yeah. So you know, we as humans have that that same sort of thing. Like short-term memory, it's like the stuff from this morning, you know, it's like maybe the stuff from yesterday too. There's just whatever it is that hasn't been saved to the floppy drive yet. And there is a section of the brain that is dedicated to doing this, and that's the hippocampus. And it turns out that the hippocampus degrades with prolonged exposure to high levels of cortisol, which doesn't mean that cortisol is bad, but prolonged exposure to high levels of cortisol is really damaging for lots of parts of the body. And it turns out that Tulsi can stimulate the regrowth of the part of the brain that that does this work and that is damaged by cortisol. But wait, there's more. And this is so exciting because Tulsi also helps us regulate and modulate our cortisol levels. So all the way around, it's like this full circle way of making sure that we keep our mental health in a good place. But it's really not just cortisol and insulin in terms of hormonal activity that Tulsi plays a role in. But as an adaptogen, Tulsi falls into that category of plants that have a generalized beneficial effect on the endocrine parts of the body, which, P.S., is all of your body. Hormones are just a way that your body sends messages from one place to another, and you might be surprised to know that even your skin has hormones. Like, even your skin produces hormones and uses that to communicate with other parts of the body. So when we talk about the endocrine system, we're really talking about the entire body, and that's kind of cool. What we're really, I guess another way of talking about it is we're talking about a function that every part of your body has, and so we're talking about the health of that function and that way of sending messages around. So Tulsi improves the body's ability to send and receive those messages in a generalized kind of way. And I think that's also really, really cool. And at least for me, is such a big part of mood issues. If my internal messaging systems are not functioning appropriately, then I am a cranky girl. And that is something that really Tulsi helps a lot with. So it's very cool in terms of just, oh, I'm off my game today because of, you know, I ate a bunch of sugar yesterday, or I, you know, I didn't get enough sleep or whatever else, and I'm just off. Tulsi is great there. But all the way up to like PTSD, because the hippocampus, that damage aspect of the hippocampus in the presence of high cortisol actually plays a role in PTSD. And so all the way from like, I got up on the wrong side of the bed this morning, all the way up to some of the hardest things to work with in terms of mental health and mental processing, this is a plant that can really, really do that work. So it definitely is awesome.
Yeah.
That's what I have to say about it.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little about favorite ways to employ Tulsi or...
Yes, let's, first off, anyway, get any, if you like tea, drink it as tea. If you like elixir, make an elixir. If you like tincture, whatever, you actually can even get capsules of Tulsi. Not my favorite way to work with a plant. However, get it in you because it's really good stuff. My favorite aspects or favorite ways to work with Tulsi would be, I think, probably the same favorite ways I work with everything, which is either as a tea or as an elixir. But I also want to share that Tulsi is amazing in mead. And if you make your own mead, then definitely put some Tulsi in there because it's really fantastic, amazingly good stuff. If you don't make your own mead, it's actually super easy. And in the medicine making module of our online program, I believe we'll be filming the mead making segment here like in another week or two. Yeah. So that's pretty exciting. I can't think of a way that Tulsi wouldn't be amazing. One thing that I have not done, but I am anxious to, is to infuse Tulsi directly into honey. And I do that with garden basil very, very commonly. It's one of my favorite things to infuse into honey. And garden basil is very closely related to Tulsi, which is holy basil. And it does share many of its aspects, but I have never had access to enough fresh Tulsi to be able to infuse that in honey, because in order to infuse in honey, you do need to use fresh plant. You can't do that with dry plant, or you can't do it very effectively. And so I'm really looking forward to a time when I have been able to grow enough Tulsi myself that I can get that into some honey fresh, and it will be so delicious. But until then, I will continue to use regular garden basil, and it's also really awesome.
Yeah. There's a bunch of different varieties of Tulsi, and they seem to, various varieties might grow better in a different part of the world or part of the country. We had a student who was growing a lot of Tulsi a couple years ago, and she suggested that for the New England area, the Kapoor variety was the best fit.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're around here, then maybe you give that one a try.
Yeah. And it does grow in a pot, you know? I mean, I'm sure it would prefer to be out in the sun all the time, but if
wouldn't we all?
Yes. But if you have a sunny window, then you can grow some Tulsi in a pot. It's okay. It's a good idea. Just keep it around you.
Nice. Okay, cool. So, last week on the podcast, we were talking a little bit about formulation. And last week, we were taking a minute to kind of look at some formulas with, 50 or 70 years of history behind them and analyzing those a little bit and seeing what was going on with that. But we also mentioned a game that we sometimes play with our advanced students, which is consider your herb as a formula, and imagine that you didn't have that plant around. How could you recreate it based on some other plants? So the first part of the idea there, that every herb is a formula, by that we pretty much just mean that each herb has a whole variety of different actions. And sometimes when people write about this, they'll talk about an herb having primary actions and secondary ones. And sometimes that's, like, functionally useful, but it also can make you think that, you know, maybe those secondary actions are, like, not as important or not as...
Or they're weaker.
Not as valid or something, yeah. Right? But what we prefer to think about it is that, you know, each herb has a variety of different activities that it can induce in the body. And some of them might be mild and some of them might be really pronounced, but it's the net effect, it's the blend of all of those different strengths coming together that gives the herb its unique nature, its unique qualities. So when we are formulating, we're sort of already formulating things that are formulas, right? You're putting together complex beings, and that's one of the strengths of herbalism. It's also one of the things that sometimes makes people feel that it's a little too complicated or too complex to get their heads around at first. But you can get there. So, this game, we do find this to be helpful, in part to make you appreciate the complexity of individual plants you work with, mm-hmm. and also as a way to kind of bump up your understanding of the plants that you work with regularly, in both directions.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, This game actually got started once because we ran out of chamomile. And
that's always a sad thing.
Not allowed to happen.
No.
In this house because
chamomile... if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. And if there's no chamomile, then I am not a happy camper.
There's trouble, yeah. So, I think you were just not feeling well, or it was a stressful day or whatever, and it's like, could you please just go make me some chamomile ginger tea? And I was like, sure, uh-oh. all right, I'll take a crack at this. And so I put together some herbs. And my initial attempt to recreate chamomile was a blend of mugwort, skullcap, linden, elder flowers, and a little bit of wood betony. Status officinalis. And the idea was, again, to think about chamomile and okay, what are the qualities of this plant? How does it taste? What kind of actions does it have? So, you know, chamomile's a nice mild carminative. It's a pretty effective relaxant. It's a nervine. It calms anxiety. It has a kind of a floral taste to it. But there's a little hint of bitter going on in there, too. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to make an effort to put together some friends that could kind of add up to that. So,
and don't forget the antispasmodic action.
Yeah, right.
That's a big part of it for me, I think.
Right. So, you know, the skullcap, linden, and betony in my blend, those are all relaxant, antispasmodic plants. Mugwort, too, to some extent. There's a little touch of bitterness coming in from the mugwort, but the other herbs, you know, they're not too bitter. The elderflower gives it that kind of floral note or scent to it.
And also, chamomile has a bitter aspect to it.
Yeah, just a little.
So, you know. Yeah.
Depending on how you prepare it. But, yeah, sure. So, anyway, that was my effort, and I presented it to you, and I think you were like, where's the chamomile?
Yeah, I think that was not a very... I think I didn't feel very good that night. But I also remember that it worked.
In the sense of this formula was able to accomplish some of the things that you were hoping to get from your chamomile.
It was effective.
So we've tried this. We've come up with like different variations on, you know, what we could put together for that purpose. You had one for your chamomile formula there.
Well, I started with ginger. Because of that antispasmodic action, and lately that is an aspect of chamomile that I'm really obsessed with, and I carry so much tension in my body that I feel like the antispasmodic action of chamomile is a really important part of how my body interacts with chamomile. And so much so that usually when I drink chamomile, I drink it with ginger. I'm like doubling up on that action. Yeah. But so when I'm trying to recreate chamomile, my first thought was that antispasmodic, where am I going to get that? And then my second aspect there was catnip. And partially that's because these days I enjoy catnip more and more. And it does have that sort of upward moving action, but I've really been getting into the diaphoretic action of catnip, and in general, more and more looking at diaphoretic from an emotional standpoint. So the word diaphoretic means that it opens the periphery and it opens the pores to allow you to sweat out a fever, or to just release heat from the body. And what I am finding more and more is that plants that are diaphoretic physiologically are also diaphoretic emotionally. And so what I mean is it allows you to release difficult emotions. And this was a wonderful thing for me to discover because I have difficulty releasing difficult emotions. I hold on to them very tightly. Mm. And so I've been finding a lot of appreciation for catnip's ability to do that. And then skullcap and linden were in my formula also. Skullcap for helping the mind to settle somewhat, and linden for helping the rest of the mind to settle. Like, so when I think of skullcap, I think about helping to settle the mind that's in the brain. And when I think about linden, I think about helping to settle the mind that's in the heart. And ginger can help to settle the mind that's in the gut. So kind of all the way around, we have that covered. And that was the end of my formula, except that then when we were talking about it and you said betony, I was like, well, of course, betony needs to be there. So I will.
Snag that one.
Yeah. I will vote yes on betony.
Cool. So you could think about this. You could think about what might be in your version of chamomile tea. I really encourage that. And you know, if not that, then choose another plant that you're really familiar with and you turn to a lot and say, like, all right, if I didn't have you around, who could I put together to try to equal the glory that was fill in the blank of your favorite friend there? Because we were talking about Tulsi earlier, and because Herbstock's coming up, and it's plant of the year and everything. Katya and I were chatting before we got started on the podcast today and saying, all right, well, what are you going to do to make a Tulsi out of others? And that's a tough one.
In case you wonder what we do when we're not talking to you, we ask each other to formulate plants. We're kind of big nerds.
Sometimes that happens. So, for this one, my idea was to combine the herbs betony and skullcap together with rosemary and another herb called jiaogulan, which I think I've mentioned a few times. Some folks also call it... what's its other name? I lost it. Well, there's a Latin name. So that's Gynostemma pentaphyllum. Jiaogulan is its kind of...
It has, like, some name with cucumber in it.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I've got to look it up.
A cucumber. All right. I don't know that one at all.
Yeah.
So let's explain this a little bit. So with Tulsi, you know, when I think about Tulsi, I think about having a mental uplifting effect, definitely getting some movement going on in the brain, whether that's, like... on the physical level with the cerebral circulation improvements that it provides, and that certainly contributes to some of its activity in supporting the health of the brain and the hippocampus and that stuff you were talking about earlier. But I also find Tulsi to be centering, and that's kind of where I'm looking for betony to come in and provide some help. And also, Tulsi is restorative over the long term to nervous function and nervous equanimity, or, like, emotional balance. And so I was looking for skullcap to kind of fill in that. And the jiaogulan I put in basically because I was looking for a adaptogenic plant that you can make into an infusion, because that's how these other herbs I was naming were going to be prepared. And, yeah, so if I was making a tea, I would go with that. I would say jiaogulan, rosemary, betony, and skullcap should get you pretty close to the activity of Tulsi. Vaguely near there in terms of flavor. There's some elements that aren't quite going to be there because of the complex array of aromatic molecules that Tulsi can make and other plants can't quite. Anyway, that was my attempt at a tea version. You had one.
Yeah, although, again, once I saw yours, I was like, well, yes, I vote for jiaogulan.
But, you know, it's an herb I love a whole lot, but I've also had a lot of trouble lately sourcing it.
It's true.
So
if we're out of Tulsi, we're probably also out of jiaogulan.
Yeah.
So my blend was starting with catnip as kind of a base, and then... and that was to sort of get that centering kind of action, but still have, like, the volatile oil aspect. And then I was like, okay, well, that's good, but Tulsi really goes up. So then I was thinking about rosemary and tarragon as two plants that really target the brain and really have that kind of effervescent sort of feel to them in the body. And then I was looking for something that would give it... the exhilarant nature that Tulsi has. So I was thinking about rose petals. And then I thought that's not enough. So so I added elderflower to help with the sort of release of difficult emotions. And in that diaphoretic, sort of that emotional diaphoretic action, because Tulsi is a diaphoretic, and it does have that aspect, but with Tulsi, it's really even more strongly an idea of moving past difficult emotions. And I don't know another herb that does that, so what I came up with was, let's at least just release them and stop holding on to them. And then, finally, I tossed in some angelica seed to get to the adaptogenic aspect. And I don't think that angelica is officially classified as an adaptogen right now. But I personally do feel strongly that it qualifies as an adaptogen. So I put in angelica seed to get that aspect.
Hmm. Yeah. Cool. Well, so that's like if we're trying to make it as a tea, and then if we were also thinking like, well, if you have a tincture, then you've got a little more freedom there because you can work with roots and barks and flowers and leaves and everybody all together, and it's a lot easier in terms of that regard. So my attempt at a Tulsi analog tincture blend was some nettle seed for the adaptogenic effects, and that like help you to keep going after you've kind of given all you thought you had.
Mm.
Nettle seed can be helpful in that way. And then some ashwagandha, a little bit more for the physical brain, and some things that we know that ashwagandha and Tulsi have in common and may also occur with other adaptogens, but these two are the ones where it seems to be the best proven so far is in that improvement of brain function and specifically in supporting the health and regenerative capacity of the hippocampus. So go ahead and put that one in there. And then for that exhilarant effect, which I think you reminded me of, I was thinking about dandelion flower, because that's my favorite of the exhilarants. There's a bunch of different herbs that get that action ascribed to them sometimes, like rose petals and tulsi for sure, and sometimes rosemary. There's a few others.
You know, I after we made that tarragon-infused honey and you made a tarragon tincture, I think that I'd like to propose tarragon as an exhilarant also.
Mm. Yeah.
It really has that feeling.
Yeah, nice. Tarragon's cool. Okay. If you have the Artemisia family together, you have, like, mugwort, and then you have wormwood, which is like mugwort, but a lot more bitter, right? And then you have tarragon, which is kind of like mugwort, but a little less bitter and a lot more aromatic. And you can kind of, like, line them all up next to each other and taste them, and that's kind of interesting. Anyway, I didn't have tarragon in my blend, but maybe you've convinced me to do it. And then finally I put some ginkgo in, again, for that kind of, like, upward-moving, cerebral circulation-increasing kind of activity. That comes well. So my total formula there was nettle seed, ashwagandha, dandelion flower, and ginkgo. And I thought that could work out pretty good.
Yeah.
It's not really going to have the flavor, though. Maybe the tarragon would help.
The tarragon will help it,
get it a little closer to that flavor. Yeah.
So my tincture formula started with a lot of ashwagandha and also heisha wu, which a lot of people refer to as fo tai. And then also it gets some of the tea flowers, too. So definitely the angelica seed and the elderflower and the catnip, and probably some of the tarragon as well, because it's, like, my new favorite thing lately.
It was the honey that did it. It was that infused honey.
Yeah.
Suddenly you were like, oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah. It's, I don't know, maybe we should have a tarragon herb of the month or something. You know, it's funny, tarragon is not really a plant that's highly regarded as an herb. It's a cooking plant and even not terribly in fashion in this country. But holy cow, you guys, it's delicious. And also it has a fun name.
Yeah. Oh yeah, it's Artemisia dracunculus.
just wonderful.
Yeah, yeah, like what... That and Humulus lupulus. It's yeah. like my two favorite Harry Potter plants.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you had also talked about making yours an elixir, putting some basil honey in there.
Yes, basil honey. Because basil honey is amazing, and because elixirs are amazing, and because if you could make your medicine taste great, why not? I think I never make tinctures anymore. I mean, I make tinctures, but I don't give straight tinctures to people anymore. It's always elixirs, because why would we not make it delicious? Mm. We can. Why not? You don't always should everything you can. But in this case...
Y'all follow that, right?
How was that for grammar for you?
You don't always should everything you can. Catch a swift.
What I mean to say is, you should always make elixir. You definitely should.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Nice. Cool. Well, I hope that game made sense to anybody else out in the world, and that you enjoyed it. And
we promise that it's actually quite a lot of fun to play in the evening while you're eating dinner, or really pretty much any time with your friends and loved ones, or at least we think it is.
Yeah. So, give it a try. Let us know what you think. If you come up with some really good math, like X plus Y plus Z equals Herb of the Month, then definitely let us know, because we're always intrigued by the way other people come at these little puzzles.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's it for us. We hope you have a great week, and we hope to see some of you tomorrow. Wow, tomorrow at Herbstock. We're totally prepared for that, yes.
No, actually, we're pretty prepared.
We're pretty good.
As Herbstock preparation goes,
yeah,
we're only doing just the last little
bits. I'm still working on my class notes, you guys. yeah, but we hope to see some of you there, and otherwise we'll talk to you again next week.
Review us on iTunes, please, please, please.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.